What time is it? The end of another season, of course, that has us asking, well, what time is it now? What is the season of life we're about to enter? For many of us, it's summer in some capacities, but if you had to call it something personal, remember Seinfeld fans when George had his summer, the summer of George, what would you call the season that we're about to enter into? How would you describe it? And what is the season of life that we're about to enter into ask from each of us? You know, I've come to think that part of being healthy and living well is understanding our own seasons of life, understanding the time we are in and what it's calling for from us, what it's asking from us. Because it's not just what we do in life. Oftentimes, it's a question of when, because certain moments, certain seasons provide opportunities or lack of opportunities. And so I thought to end this season, we'd pause before summer mode and almost make it a bit of a bridge into summer and into the fall and consider what might our summer look like? What might it ask of us? What about our falls? If we're some of us, please don't be thinking about fall yet. I just want to get in summer and enjoy it. But how those all link up together. And I want us to think about that. What is God asking of us in this moment or preparing us for? And the trouble is, a lot of times to fully embrace a new season of life, it means letting go and leaving behind something. A season of life, a time, a period. And that can at times be difficult. To embrace what is before us or next for us often means letting go of something. And we see a great portrait of this in Scripture post-resurrection. In John 20, we read this. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. And they asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "Taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. And he asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you're looking for?" And thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I've not yet ascended to the Father." I love this scene, this reunion scene, Jesus and Mary post-resurrection, when all hope is gone. She comes faithfully to the tomb and is at least initially confused, but then in that moment, Jesus speaks her name and she recognizes him. But then the story ends so oddly. It ends with Jesus saying, "Don't hold on to me." And it's as if in that moment when she realizes it's Jesus, she lunges to hug him, to hold on to him. And Jesus is like, whoa, don't hold on to me. And it seems strange, almost a little heartless, a little lack of compassion. I mean, Jesus, she just wants to give you a hug. What's the big deal with a hug? Well, I felt over COVID really bad for our, I don't know if I felt bad, but our social huggers were struggling. They were really struggling because you couldn't give people hugs. And for some reason, I know a lot of social huggers. And it's always interesting to me during COVID because it was my time. You got to ask my permission. But some people are so physically in need of touch. I remember meeting up with a guy in COVID, and we're all in lockdown. And we're like, "Hey, before you go, just please touch my foot." I'm like, "Really? We're doing footsies here? Like, just please, I need physical touch." Or I had a friend of mine 6 months into, you know, the COVID thing, and I remember he said to me, "I haven't hugged another person for 6 months." Just that lack of physical touch. Can you imagine that? And it just seems so natural of Mary here to, I want to give you a hug. I want to hold you. And so this part of the story, it sort of strikes us as odd. She just wants to hug Jesus. What's the big deal? But of course, we know John is the most artistic of the gospel writers. This isn't about hugs. It's more about the human condition and our propensity, I think, as humans to try to hold on to what once was. And what Mary seems to be thinking at this moment is, perfect, you're back. I can grab, hold on to you. Things can go back to the way they were. Things can carry on now as usual. Now things can go back to normal the way they were. I'll keep following you. You'll keep teaching. But Jesus is like, oh no, Mary, a new season is here. A new season has come. Something has ended, an era, a season has ended. Something new has come. And so we have to react differently. And in many ways, I think this story is about the human condition and how we want things to go back to how they were when it was safe and comfortable. We can understand this in our own lives. Even though there was sort of no end date to COVID, it's like, oh great, we can go back to how it was before. Or sometimes in our relationships, you get over some sort of hurdle, perhaps, like, okay, we can go back to how we were. And Jesus is saying, wait, Mary, things can't go back to the way they were. Things are going to be different because that season is over. And now there's a new season, and it calls for different things. And I really think this speaks to our propensity to cling to the old, the familiar, what is comfortable, what we know, what is. But I don't think we can do that as humans and hope to remain healthy. Time asks different things from us. We can't recreate the past. We can't live in the good old days. So the question, I think, always in front of us is, what time is it? What is this moment, this new season asking of me? And sometimes that means letting go of how it was so that you can be open to what is. We all have certain things about our identity that we hold on to. One of the greatest identity-shaping moments for me was in grade 2, and I won the 100-meter dash. I finished first. In fact, I set a school record, a record that, as far as I know, still stands today. And then I repeated it in grade 3. And it might be a shock to some of you, but for those in the know, what they'll tell you is, Brad is surprisingly quick over short distances. I'm a quick sprinter, very quick. I've had races with neighbors. They don't believe me. I had a race on King Street with a friend one time. He didn't believe I was quick. Smoked him. And this has always been part of my identity, but a few years ago, Kristen and I, because we lack a lot of things in common, she's like, we need a thing for us to do together. And she said, so you should do my thing, which is run a triathlon, duathlon. So yeah, I agreed. So I had to get, okay, we'll do this together. And I got the couch to 5K app, you know. So I got up to running 5K, getting ready for the race. But there was this particular day, I'm running this 5K loop, and I'm coming towards my street, Brubaker. I'm coming down Lancaster, and I'm running. And I notice in front of me a man looking at his phone in a mobility scooter, and he's smoking. And he's in the middle of the sidewalk. And I thought, well, this is a bit of a dilemma. Lancaster's a busy street. I'm going to have to get around him because he's just sitting there. And so I jumped onto the road, jogging at my very modest pace. And the moment I got beside him, he looked at me and took off in his mobility scooter, just smoking at me and looking at me, traveling at the exact pace I was running. And I'm like, well, this is a busy street. How am I going to get back onto the sidewalk? He's just looking at me. And then I remembered, I'm surprisingly quick over short distances. So I'm just going to sprint in front of him. So I mustered every ounce of energy within me, and I called into the deep recesses of my sprinting soul, and I took off, and so did Mobility Scooter Man. He just put it in fifth. I've read here, what is it, the Mobility Scooter's top speed is 8 miles per hour. He was going that and then some. And I couldn't get around this guy. And finally, I came to my street. He pulled in front of me. I had to stop, stumble, and get behind him. But I couldn't get by an 8-mile-per-hour scooter. And in that moment, I thought, this season is done. And now look at me. I got a bandage on my knee. I'm no longer the sprinter. I have to let go of that identity, which is a small thing, but it shocked me nonetheless. And there's way more serious things that come up in life, right? No longer able to sprint. I've talked with retired people who, this is a bit difficult because I've let go of work life and I'm not quite sure my identity now. Or some of us in COVID, we got so used to every single night watching Netflix and not having to talk to anyone. We're like, oh, okay, but this is no longer that season. Or our relationship, okay, this thing happened and maybe we need to move beyond it, but it can never be quite the same. And so it is in life, with church, with anything. There are seasons, and we learn from them, and we grow from them, and we can't stay and remain in the past. We can't do that and hope to remain healthy. Because timing and seasons ask different things from us. We can't recreate the past. We can't live in the past. So the question is always, what is this time, this moment, this season asking of us? And it's one thing to recognize that maybe a new season of life is upon us. But there's often two things we miss before we can enter what is new. And I think summer offers us one of these things. The two things are liminal space, which we've talked a little bit about before, and grieving. And I want to expand on these two ideas with a story. I love this story in Scripture. Paul sometimes cannot always feel the most human, but we see a very tender side to Paul here. It's in Acts 20. It goes this way. From Miletus, Paul sent to Ephesus for the elders of the church. And when they arrived, he said to them, "You know how I have lived the whole time I was with you. From the first day I came into the province of Asia, I served the Lord with great humility and with tears and in the midst of severe testing." He's been around them for 3 years, building up their church, their community. And now, he says, "compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. Now I know that none of you among whom I have gone about preaching the kingdom will ever see me again. So be on your guard. Remember that for 3 years I never stopped warning each of you, night and day, with tears. So now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified." And when Paul finished speaking, he knelt down with them all and prayed, and they wept as they embraced and kissed him. And what grieved them most was his statement that they would never see his face again. And then they accompanied him to the ship, and he was off. It's a rather emotional scene in Scripture because it's a little foreign to us, because even if someone here were to move to the other side of the world, the thought of never seeing someone again is foreign to us. We could always Zoom with them, FaceTime with them. We would hear from them on social media or in email. So this idea, this finality of "you'll never see me again" is a bit foreign to us. And Paul had spent over a decade, in fact, in Asia, planting different churches. But with this group of people, he had been with them for 3 intense years, working with them, pouring himself into them, forming incredibly deep relationships. But he senses, you know what, there's a new chapter, there's a new season of life waiting for me. And so he's leaving one period of time, one season, because a new time had come for him. But two things about this story really jump out at me. The first is what we call liminal space. Because Paul realizes, okay, one season's done, and I feel I need to go to Jerusalem, but it's not clear to him what that looks like. I know I'm finished here. I know I have to head there, but it's not clear to me what that looks like yet. And so notice what he says to his friends: "Compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there." One season comes to an end, another has not yet begun, and in the middle, it's often just blank. And he finds himself in liminal space. Liminal space is the period between seasons, period between time. Summer fits this so well. It's the period between one year ending and another year beginning. And oftentimes this space is the space to discern what is next. And I think there's many important lessons, a lot of interesting things to learn in liminal space if we give ourselves the time. If we don't try to fill that empty space with endless distractions. And so you know there's a next thing for you, maybe for us, but it's not yet fully revealed what that is. You find yourself trying to figure out, what is my fall going to look like? What am I going to do for work? But it's not clear yet, and it can be painful. It can be a time of tension. We don't like to wait. We don't like uncertainty. It's uncomfortable. And so I think the temptation for all of us is to either rush through liminal space or distract ourselves until something just pops into our laps. And this was a really big reason why we wanted to do that COVID Sunday a little while back. A fantastic morning for us all, because as Sarah wisely pointed out, there was no end, right? We're still kind of, is this, are we still in COVID? What is this? There was no firm end time for us, and so we were stuck in this in-between land. But to sort of say, okay, whatever that was, and even though it might not be quite done, I know I'm not in that season, but maybe what's next isn't quite clear. And what we're hoping is that more intention about our summer this year might give us space to occupy liminality, ask what's next. Maybe summer and what we've created is almost a, perhaps you could say, a curated liminal space experience. And Paul didn't know what was ahead. He just felt compelled to go. He must go, head in the direction he was called. And for us, it might not feel like a compulsion, right? But it might also be just the sense of, okay, I feel the need for some kind of change. But that's hard to do. It's hard to sit in that space, because liminal space asks us to actively sit, listen, be present with God. And it doesn't work if we're always distracting ourselves. And we can miss what these moments want to teach us. And I don't know about you, but for me, summer can feel like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic, and then it's done, and you're like, huh, where did that go? Where did that go? I maybe didn't properly occupy it. And for Paul, it's like, again, this season of in-between, they bring us into liminal space, and it calls for our attention. But what most moves me here in this scene with Paul is the grieving. There's a tangible sense of grief. And Paul was, of course, always very optimistic. Despite my sufferings, greater glory is coming. But again, we see a true humanity here. He weeps in this moment. And I think change is always a form of loss. Always some sort of change brings loss. We don't know what to expect because we've never been to this new place before. And so we can end up trying to recreate old seasons. And so when we leave a season of time, when the time is right to move on to that next thing, there's a place for us to grieve. And the reality is, right, we have so few rituals for that. It's amazing to me how often people still bring up the sadness fire we had years ago. Sadness fire. People just came, dropped some stuff into a fire, things they had to let go of. We need more rituals like that. And we see this played out in the scene. Paul, he takes the moment. It's not just, hey, something new's coming, see you later. No, let's grieve. Let's grieve. And to properly move forward into what the moment of time in front of us has, it means grieving what was lost. And so as this song, you know, it's from Ecclesiastes, the song that Turn band just played, it's a thoughtful song. It asks us to think, well, what season is it for me? I think the words of the wisdom tradition are appropriate here, Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. It's a time for everything. So, as we move into the summer, what time is it for you? Is there something you need to let go of? Maybe you're already in liminal space. Maybe there's something you need to grieve. But what I'm confident of this, and our calendars tend to work at least in our Western culture here, that the fall is kind of the new year, the new season. And I want us to already start thinking about what time it is for us. What might this next year look for us? Because I believe God's Spirit's always calling us forward. What is next? Where to now? And so I hope we have the courage to enter into new seasons of life with our whole being. But I want to already, this morning, introduce Nexus Season 14. Never done this early before. And the name of it is awful. I'll come up with something better over the summer. But right now, it's Nexus Season 14, hard. Hard. What does that mean? Well, my sense is, and that, what is it, Brené Brown's line, we're meant to do hard things. We can do hard things. And you know, one of the things we've prized at Nexus for years is that in many ways we try not to make anyone do any hard things. Want people to be comfortable. But maybe it's a time to do hard things. What does that mean? Don't really know. That's just the sense I get in four specific ways. Maybe it's time to do some relational hard work in our lives, some spiritual hard work, some physical hard work, some creative hard work. Again, I don't know what that looks like. But maybe it's time we ask ourselves if there might be a little bit more. And we're coming out of a period in a season. It was in many ways, COVID was hard, but it asked so little of us. Do your part for the cause and do nothing. But maybe there's now a season saying, ah, but now it's time to pick up something heavy. But before we can enter into that, we might need liminal space. And so what we've tried to do this summer, it will look very similar to every other summer, but we've tried to actually, in some ways, I guess, curate liminal space. What does that look like? What does that mean? So let me just take you quickly through the 8 movements we've designed for this summer. So what's going to happen is when you show up at a Sunday event, you'll get a card with some questions on these themes, a little quote. I'm going to be blogging about these themes. That'll be in the Nexus Weekly, on social media. Just a little bit of a way to intentionally take us through summer with a bit more intentionality. And the purpose is this, to make sure that we don't end up at the end of summer and go, ah, I missed it. I was so busy or I got caught up in whatever that I didn't really stop and think about what I wanted the new season to look like and be. And so it starts with refresh, setting our intentions for the summer because, I booked the camping trip, booked this, get away, and before we know it, we can say, well, I don't really know if I have intentions, I just have plans for the summer. I don't know if I have any intentions. And so we thought we'd start with refresh. What do we need to just, oh. I mean, even on this weekend alone, I'm like, good night, I'm getting old. 3 days out in a row, I'm like, whew, got to rest and refresh. But sort of that plunging into cold water, what is it that brings you refreshment? And can you intentionally look at the summer and go, the things that refresh me are this, this, and this, and I need to intentionally plan those things in for the summer? And then the second week will be about connecting, finding connection. And maybe, I don't know about you, but you get busy during the year and then you look back and you go, oh, all of those things that I had inside of me that I wanted to do or get at, I just left them behind. And so maybe there's a point where we go, how do I reconnect with myself and take myself out of just productivity mode and go, what does it mean to reconnect with myself? Who are the people that I can connect with that might refresh me? And then savor, third week, savor. Before we start looking to the fall, right, can we just take a moment, enjoy the moment in front of us? Whether it's just that sunset, maybe you're at the beach one day, can I just pause and not think about the future or the past, but just enjoy the moment that's in front of me? And then fourth week, we're going to move into intention. Hey, before it becomes the September long weekend, maybe I could set intentions for the fall. Maybe before my intentions are just forced back and I'm forced back into a schedule, I could start the end of July by going, okay, what do I intentionally want the fall to look like? And then fifth week, service. Let me make sure that I give myself to service in some way. But also thinking about the way we need to limit ourselves. There's so many good causes we could be involved in. There's so many areas of need. But it's like, no, where do I want to serve? Give myself in service. Sixth week, I've lost track what week we're on. But then remember, a week of remembering. We can't learn and move forward without looking back. So maybe it's like, what have I learned about myself through COVID? What have I learned about myself through summer? And how can I use those learnings to move forward? And then boundaries. Setting limits. We're finite. We can't do everything. And the temptation every fall is what? Oh, I got to sign up the kids for these 13 things, and then I'm going to be involved in this. And boom, boundaries. Let's set some limits on ourselves. And then we're going to end the summer with a week of just gratitude, saying thanks. And here's the thing. I know everyone's summer looks different. I'm going to ask the band to come too and take us into a song about that. But I know everyone's summer looks different. For some of you, you're like, what? I don't even have any vacation left. I already took it, so the summer's going to look like every other week. But there's still a slower rhythm in the summer. And some of us will be away maybe the whole summer, whatever it is, but we want to end with, there's something about taking a moment to say thanks. Looked at that last week, right? Gord Downie, hands in the river, feet back up on the banks, looked up to the Lord above, said, hey man, thanks, to say thank you for the gifts that are all around us. And so this summer, we just wanted to come at it a little bit more intentionally. And say, hey, maybe we can curate a pattern here that lets us move into the fall and a new season with more intention and awareness.